Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the L.A. Steel Show. I'm Lila.
I'm Leo.
And tonight we have some special reports for you. Would you like to start off with a GMO or would you like to start off with this?
Oh, I don't know.
Well, we've had Tex Mars on our show a number of times, and Tex came out with his latest newsletter.
It's called The Power Prophecy.
Yeah, and I was so impressed with this article because... Finally, U.S. intelligence community warns that Israel is a rogue state, and it's a tremendous thing that's happening. And we all are aware of the, or you may be aware of the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Martin Dempsey, refused to be a toady. Okay. To the Zionists and went over there and talked to them, or rather made a statement that we wouldn't get involved with any war with Iran.
Mm-hmm.
All right, but let me start and then you can take. That'll be all right.
Yeah.
All right. 16 U.S. intelligence agencies, the Pentagon, and U.S. President Barack Obama tell Israel no. Hell hath no fury like a Zionist. Scorned. That's not quite the way the famous author William Congreve of The Morning Bride in 1697 put it, but it's still an accurate observation. The arrogant Jews in Israel and America are so used to getting their way that when finally they are refused and told no, they go absolutely wild in anger and disbelief. Well, it finally happened again. The last time I'm gonna quote, you know, these rather inflammatory, but these jackals from hell were told no, was in 1963 when President John F. Kennedy informed Israel's puffed-up buffoon of a prime minister, David Ben-Gurion, that no, the United States will not allow Israel to have another nuclear bomb, or have a nuclear bomb, rather. That refusal ended badly for the courageous U.S. chief executive. The Mossad, working in league with Vice President Lyndon Johnson, J. Edgar Hoover, the FBI, and other traitorous killers, splattered JFK's head and brain out with a crack of sniper rifles aimed from several locations in our Dallas. So he's implicated these people as the assassins, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But of JFK, because they refused. They said no to Israel. The interesting part of this real article here is this. U.S. intelligence community warns that Israel is a rogue state. Now comes yet another dramatic moment in American and Israeli history, according to the authoritative Foreign Policy Journal. All 16 U.S. intelligence agencies, including the CIA, the DEA, and the NSA, and the FBI, and others, have drafted an amazing 82-page classified report entitled Preparing for a Post Israel, Middle East. I've read this before somewhere recently about this, but not on the air. Currently being reviewed by the White House and by key congressional leaders, the report brilliantly analyzes geopolitics and economics in the Middle East and globally. It concludes that Zionist Israel is the greatest single threat to American society, security, and to the American economy. It says Israel cannot be salvaged. Among its many startling deductions is the report cogent analysis that Israel, given its current brutal occupation and belligerence, cannot be salvaged. This is a quote from the report. It further states that Israel is wickedly out of control, out of touch with the political, military, and economic realities of the Middle East. Astonishingly, Astonishing is the well-documented report established that Israel consistently carries out spy activities in opposition to U.S. national interests, and that is recognized by almost every nation on earth as a militant, bloody aggressor. The overwhelming majority of people everywhere firmly believe that Israel's brutal and oppressive occupation of Palestine and its unarmed citizens, our civilian population, is illegal and immoral. Moreover, an unprecedented intelligence report issued by all 16 U.S. intelligence agencies say that America's financial and military support of Israel and its wars and occupation is neither sustainable nor desirable, and conflicts with America's own and conflicts with America's own national interests. For example, it reveals that Israel has constantly lied over and over, exaggerating the nuclear capabilities of its hated foe, Iran. In fact, the U.S. intelligence community finds that Iran has no nuclear bombs and is not developing nuclear weapons. Would you like to read the rest of that?
Yeah, just show me where you were. I was just listening to this.
Right. Israel's rampant and violent racism.
Report notes, too, Israel's rampant and violent racism and bigotry against other nations and peoples. Moreover, Israel's occupation of Palestine and crimes committed against the innocent constitute genocidal conduct, which is anathema to international law. In sum, Israel is labeled by the report a rogue criminal state, unworthy and undeserving of U.S. financial and diplomatic support. The ripples caused by the 82-page report are spreading far and wide. The Israeli lobby has obtained copies of the draft from the Zionism spies, from Zionism spies, traitors to the United States, like U.S. Senator Charles Schumer, John McCain, Congressman Eric Cantor, and Congresswoman Elena Ross Leitanen. Reportedly, Israel's prime minister, the belligerent and bellicose Benjamin Netanyahu, is boiling with anger. He and the Jewish neocons in the USA are plotting revenge against the report's authors, especially in their gunfighter, General Martin Dempsey, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff at the Pentagon, President Barack Obama. That the head of Israel's Knesset, that's their parliament, how dare Obama turn against us after all we Jews have done for him? Interestingly, one of the areas mentioned in the report is the widespread spying by Israel firsters and Zionist saboteurs. It calls their efforts gross interference in the international affairs of the United States. The report notes that Israel and Zionism have more than 60 front organizations active in these Zionism spying efforts, and that in the U.S. there are approximately 7,500 U.S. officials who do Israel's bidding. The magnitude of Zionist Israel spying and interference in U.S. affairs seemingly even excels the spies associated with the Soviet Union and Red China in their heyday. Maybe what we need is a modern-day Senator Joseph McCarthy to step forth and expose these dangerous anti-American Zionists. Their ranks notably include not only the many Zionist spies in public office, but also those of Zionist agents in the mainstream media, on Wall Street, industry, and in academia. America is literally bursting at its seams with Zionist sympathizers, lobbyists, and spies who prefer Israel over America and would sell out their home country in a Tel Aviv moment if the tyrannical rabbis of Israel asked them to. Of course, one of the most dangerous of all Zionist agents is Governor Mitt Romney, nominated by the Republican Party for president. Some people believe that his Bain Capital Group was an Israeli front. Meanwhile, Bain's media branch, Clear Channel Communications, from which Zio fanatics like Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Laura Ingraham, and Michael Savage spout the venomous, warmongering, pro-Israel propaganda, is nothing less than a Zionist fifth column spy front. How many Americans know that the popular neocon media personalities are actually well-paid Zionist puppets and mouthpieces? These many Zionist agents are at this very moment working hard to have the new draft intelligence report trashed so that we will never see the light of day. They fear that if its potent contents are released for public review, the ground under their feet may shift significantly. The ordinary citizen, American citizen, will finally see in a clear, accurate, and much different light what Zionism stands for and what the kind of ungodly, bloody, aggressive, theocratic state Israel really is.
Mitt Romney, chosen by America's foreign enemy, is Israel. The Zionists among us and the Israeli politicians and chief rabbis do not want Americans to read this documentary report or become privy to its tenet. They intend to postpone its release until January 20th, when their chosen man, Mitt Romney, is inaugurated as the new USA president. Romney has promised his friend Netanyahu that as soon as he has taken the oath of office, he will permanently bury the report. That is why Mitt Romney flew to Israel recently, in the very midst of his busy political campaign. In Tel Aviv and Jerusalem, Romney met with Prime Minister Netanyahu and high rabbis and with the Masonic Lodge elite of Israel. Romney pledged to them that if they would use their Jewish lobby and billions of campaign dollars to throw Barack Obama under the bus, abandon him, and cut off his media and financial support, he, Romney, would do four things for Israel. First, kill his 82-page report, preparing for a post-Israel Middle East. Second, shower Israel with tens of billions more U.S. dollars in aid money, not to be repaid. Third, provide Israel with new high-tech weapon systems, including electronic mind control systems, laser weapons, improved nuclear bombs, IRBM and ICBM capability, and long-range bomber aircraft refueling tankers. These would make tiny Israel invulnerable. The weapons would be the bully sticks the Jews would use to rule the Middle East and even to threaten Russia and Europe. And fourth, U.S. forces will invade Iran, attacking Tehran's military installation with U.S. nuclear bombs if need be. Romney and Mormon Church in opposition to U.S. national interests. The truth is that Romney is a covert Israeli agent. His Mormon Church's official doctrine encourages his anti-American defection by proclaiming its members to be of 12 tribes of Israel. That's right, the Church of Mormon claims it is the tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh. It is therefore a Judaic cult hostile to the USA and to America's national interests. Well, Mitt Romney's traitorous activity should not go unpunished. I hereby demand that Romney and his pro-Israel cabal of Zionist spies be investigated for the crime of giving material and comfort to America's enemy, Israel. Moreover, I hereby demand that the law enforcement agencies of the federal government and site states initiate a criminal investigation of Mitt Romney's shadowy Bain and company. The chairman of the board of Bain is none other than a former Mossad agent, Orit Gadish, an Israeli citizen, again confirming Romney's long-standing Mossad connections. If the Israeli spies and saboteurs inside the USA are not quickly outed and investigated, we are going to lose our once great nation. We must move at once to investigate their crimes and remove each and every one from their perch of high trust.
Mm-hmm.
And that's from Tex Sainz. And time is of the essence. He says, let the study report commissioned by the U.S. intelligence community and endorsed by General Martin Dempsey, the courageous chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, be the guide and impetus to our efforts. And remember, dear friends, if we wait and delay until January 20th, 2013, it may be too late. A man who serves a foreign power and has a lifelong history of subversion and sabotage of American foreign and domestic policy may, on that day, be making his inaugural address to Washington, D.C. If that tragic and unfortunate event were to occur, we and our nation would be in deep and dire trouble. Blood war and the disintegration of America by traitors to our flag would be at hand. Then you and I will become as Palestinians are today. We shall be slaves of a cruel and heartless nation and people, psychopaths who actually believe the satanic lie that they are men of God, men gods. While you and I, they teach, are but goyim, cattle fit for destruction. This is what in the Torah, man. This is what the Jews believe. Now, this was written by Tex Mars, and I, you know, and you can go into my programs with LASteelship.org. I did a 3-part program that we did on his latest DVD, Die America Die. I'm going to have a lot of read this one. I've got another article I want to
read. There's quite a few good articles on GMOs.
We can do one more on the Israel. This one is really something.
This is from Press TV. U.S. and Israel are seeking to develop SARS-like race specific bioweapons. The claim was made following the identification by the World Health Organization of a new SARS-like race-specific virus that targets people of Middle Eastern descent. The original SARS, severe acute respiratory syndrome, resulted in the death of numerous people in Hong Kong. The Zionist-led Israeli regime has been seeking to spot specific genes carried by humans of Arab descent in an attempt to develop a race-specific bioweapon that could be covertly be exposed to Arab populations in order to commit a massive ethnic cleansing wherever necessary. Anonymous intelligence sources have also claimed that work is underway to create a genetically modified bacteria as a bioweapon which could be deployed through the air or water supply. According to intelligence sources, Israeli defense, working with the British defense apparatus at Porton Down, is seeking to produce this race-specific bioweapon. Earlier in September, the first case of SARS-like virus was identified in Qatar. The victim was transferred to Britain, where it was discovered that the coronavirus was similar to SARS as far as its structure is concerned. The second case was a Saudi-born woman who died after being attacked by the new virus. The symptoms of the SARS-like virus have been said to be fever, cough, and other respiratory signals. SARS suddenly surfaced between November 2002 and July 2003. An estimated 8,090 people of Asian descent were affected, and 774 of them succumbed to the race-specific virus.
That's what's going on there. I mean, it's really quite frightening when you think what they're capable of doing. And with the help of the UK, and I want to read this one later, but I thought, well, we can do this now, and then we'll go to the GMO part in the second half of the show. Because I got a number of GMO articles that I want to read. This one particularly is about the
economic collapse
of the European Union.
This is from Tea Party Patriots. The largest economy in the world is imploding right in front of our eyes. A devastating economic depression.
I'm sorry.
That was an ad that was on
the
side.
This is from the Economic.
Sorry, the name of the site is The Economic. No, is that correct?
Or The Economic.
No.
Wait a minute. Yeah, The Economic Collapse.
Yeah.
The blog name.
Yeah, that's the name of. Are you prepared for the coming economic collapse as the next Great Depression? Okay. And this is 20 good questions that.
Okay, good question. Wait a minute.
Yeah, look out, Leo. Twenty-eight questions that the mainstream media should be asking. Why is there so little trust in the mainstream?
No, this is not the right one.
Wait a minute.
There is.
Okay. Somehow we got to the wrong article here. This is the largest economy in the world is imploding right in front of our eyes. A devastating economic depression is rapidly spreading across the largest economy in the world. Unemployment is skyrocketing, money being pulled out of the banks at an astonishing rate, bad debts are everywhere, and economic activity is slowing down
month after month. So whom am I talking about? Not the United States. The economy that I'm talking about has a GDP that is more than $2 trillion larger. It's not China either. The economy that I am talking about is more than twice the size of China. You have probably guessed by now, the largest economy in the world is the EU economy. Things in Europe continue to get worse. I've got to make this a little bigger. Greece and Spain are already experiencing full-blown economic depressions that continue to deepen, and Italy and France are headed down the exact same path that Greece and Spain have gone. Headlines about violent protests and economic despair dominate European newspapers day after day. European leaders hold summit meetings after summit meeting, but all of the solutions that get announced never seem to fix anything. In fact, the largest economy on the planet continues to implode right in front of our eyes, and the economic shockwave from the implosion is going to be felt to the four corners of the earth. On Friday, newspapers all over Europe declared that Greece is about to run out of money again. The Greek government says that without more aid, they will completely run out of cash by the end of November. Of course, the rest of Europe is going to continue to pour money into Greece because they know if they don't, the financial markets will panic. But they are also demanding that Greece make even more painful budget cuts. Previous rounds of budget cuts have been extremely damaging to the Greek economy. The Greek economy contracted by 4.9% during 2010 and 7.1% during 2011. Overall, the Greek economy has contracted by about 20% since 2008. This is what happens when you live way above your means for far too long and a day of reckoning comes. The adjustment can be immensely painful. Greece continues to implement wave after wave of austerity measures. And these austerity measures have pushed into a very deep depression, but Greece is still not even close to a balanced budget. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Greece is spending more money than it is bringing in, and Greek politicians are warning. Greece is spending more money than it is bringing in, and Greek politicians are warning that even more budget cuts could mean for their society. For example, what Greek Prime Minister Samaras had to say the other day was absolutely chilling. He said, "Greek democracy stands before what is perhaps its greatest challenge." Samaras told the German business daily Handelsblatt in an interview published hours before the announcement in Berlin that Angela Merkel will fly to Athens next week for the first time since the outbreak of the crisis. Resorting to highly unusual language for a man who weighs his words carefully, the 61-year-old politician evoked the rise of the neo-Nazi Golden Dawn Party to highlight the threat that Greece faces, explaining that society is threatened by growing unemployment, as happened to Germany at the end of the Weimar Republic. And citizens know that this government is Greece's last chance, said Samaras, who has repeatedly appealed for international lenders at the EU and IMF to relax the onerous conditions of the bailout records accords, prompting up the Greek economy. But don't look down on Greece. They are just ahead of the curve. Eventually, the U.S. and the rest of Europe will go down the exact same path. Just look at Spain. When Greece first started imploding, Spain insisted that the same thing would never happen to them, but it did. It, by itself, Spain is the 12th largest economy in the world, and right now it is a complete and total mess with no hope of recovery in sight. The national government is broke. The regional governments are broke. The banking system is insolvent, and Spain is in the midst of the worst housing crisis that it has ever seen. And on top of everything else, the unemployment rate in Spain is now over 25%, and the unemployment rate of those under the age of 25 is now well over 50%.
Wow.
An astounding 9.86% of all loans that Spanish banks are holding are considered to be bad loans, which will probably never be collected. Before it is all said and done, probably every major Spanish bank will need to be bailed out at least once. Manufacturing activity in Spain has contracted for 17 months in a row. The number of corporate bankruptcies in Spain is rising at a stunning rate. And five different Spanish regions have formally requested bailouts from the national government, and the national government is drowning in an ocean of red ink. Meanwhile, panic has set in, and there has been a run on the banks in Spain. The following is from a recent Bloomberg article. Do you want to read them?
Go ahead. Banco Santander.
Spain's largest bank lost 6.3% of its domestic deposits in July, according to data published by Nations Banking Association. Saving at Banco Popular Español, the sixth biggest, fell 9.5% the same month. Eurobank Avaris S.A., Greece's second largest lender, lost 22% of its customer deposits in 12 months, ended March 31st. According to the latest data available from the firm.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's the country's third largest bank, Alpha Bank, lost 26% of client savings during that period. Overall, the equivalent of 7% of gross national of GDP was withdrawn from the Spanish banking system in the month of July alone. Thousands of Spaniards have become so desperate that they have resorted to digging around and supermarket trash bins for food. In response, locks are being put on supermarket trash bins in some areas. But Greece and Spain are not alone in seeing their economies implode. As I wrote about recently, the number of unemployed workers in Italy has risen more than 37% over the past year. The French economy is starting to implode as well. Just check out this article. I'm not going to go to it, but the unemployment rate in France is now about 10% and has risen for 16 months in a row. It is just a matter of time before things in Italy and France get as bad as they already are in Greece and Spain. The chief economist of the IMF is now saying that it will take until at least 2018 for the global economy to recover. But unfortunately, I believe that he is being overly optimistic. As I have said so many times before, the next wave of global economic crisis is rapidly approaching. Depression is already sweeping much of Southern Europe, and it's only a matter of time before it sweeps across Northern Europe and North America as well. Neither Obama or Romney is going to be able to stop what is coming. The global economy is getting weaker with each passing day. The central banks of the world can print money until the cows come home, but that isn't going to fix our fundamental problems. The largest economy in the world is imploding right in front of our eyes, and nobody seems to know what to do about it. If you believe that Barack Obama, Mitt Romney, or Ben Bernanke can somehow magically shield us from the economic shockwave that is coming, then you are being delusional. Just because what is going on in Europe is a slow-motion train wreck does not mean that it will be any less devastating. Yes, we can see what is coming, and we can understand why it is happening, but that doesn't mean that we will be able to avoid the consequences. And, so that's pretty freaky stuff. And you can get this if you go to The Economic Collapse. It's the name of the site. So, anyway, let's go on. Pretty freaky stuff, huh?
Oh, very.
Right. Scared business.
Yep.
But, you want to go for a quick break?
Yeah, that'd be
like
good.
That? And then,
yeah.
we'll come back.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you've been reading a lot. You go ahead.
Let's see. And it's kind of a nice song. It says, "All is not lost."
Audio?
Yeah.
Yeah. Excuse us, let's try a different one.
Okay. Hang on a second. This one. article is, I'm going to start ours, a little section on GMOs.
From Mercola.com. Why do supporters of genetically engineered foods insist on organics for their own families? Isn't that nice? This is by Dr. Mercola. Over the past few years, an interesting pattern has emerged where political supporters of genetically engineered foods are feasting on organics while promoting unlabeled GE foods for everyone else. Most recently, Mother Jones discussed how presidential hopeful Mitt Romney, whose ties to Monsanto go back to the 1970s when GE crops were still in the R&D phase, reportedly makes sure his own meals are nothing but organic, according to Peter Alexander of MSN Today. And this is a quote. On air, on Air Force One, as Reuters' Steve Holland liked to call it, Mitt Romney had his own galley in forward cabin. And while I've never been invited up front, sources close to the campaign tell me that shelves are stocked with a wide variety of healthy fare, cashew cereals, hummus, pita, as well as organic applesauce. Everything's organic, I'm told, including the ingredients to Romney's favorite peanut butter and honey sandwiches. An even more interesting in 2002 article about Romney's wife, Anne, she credits a combination of organic foods and holistic medicine for turning her health around after she was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis in 1998. The profile reads in part, she was 49 at the time and the disease was progressing rapidly, she says, prompting the doctors to put her on steroids, which made her so sick she could barely get out of bed. They were killing me, she says, of the treatment. You have bone loss. They are so bad for you. Mrs. Romney was introduced to several practitioners of holistic medicine who persuaded her to adopt alternative therapies. She now eats organic foods and very little meat. She practices reflexology and undergoes acupuncture treatment. She credits the lifestyle with turning her health around. Everyone has to find their own way, she says. 3 years ago, I was really sick and not able to function at all. A lot of the symptoms are gone now. Mrs. Romney isn't the only success story in which food played a central role in beating multiple sclerosis. Last year, I posted an article about Dr. Terry Wilde's reverse MS after 7 years of deterioration on the best conventional treatments available simply by changing her diet. Wouldn't it be nice? Change of pace if our agriculture authorities, not to mention our president, could reach into their hearts and find the humanity to fight for everyone's right to eat wholesome food that doesn't contain foreign DNA, built-in pesticides, and an enormous amount of synthetic chemicals so the diseases such as MS and cancer could be curtailed before they even get a foothold. If GE foods are so great, why won't the elite eat them? While Obama has been a huge supporter of big biotech during his term, Romney is just as tight with Monsanto, having actually successfully guided the company out of lawsuits with Congress in the shameful aftermath of Agent Orange and a heinous chemical dumping incident in Missouri and Alabama. He's also in favor of putting the Monsanto rider provision in the 2012 Farm Bill, a rider that would prevent a federal court from putting in place court-ordered restrictions on a GE crop, even if the approval were fraudulent or involved bribery, among other things.
This is Mitt Romney, folks.
Yes. Unfortunately, Mitt Romney is just one in a line of politician who supports and promotes GE foods as being just as safe and natural as conventional foods, while privately serving up nothing organic for their own families.
Nothing but organic.
Yeah, nothing but organic for their own families. President Obama, as his predecessors, George W. Bush and Bill Clinton, have all reportedly insisted on an organic diet. Mother Jones writes, what's my evidence that the Clintons and Bushes ate organic? Get this, from someone who knows, Walter Scheib, who served as White House executive chef during the Clinton and Bush years. From 1994 to 2005, I was an executive chef at the White House. This offered me not only the personal honor of serving two unique and interesting first families, but the professional challenge of fulfilling Hillary Clinton's mandate of bringing contemporary American cuisine and nutritionally responsible food to the White House. This meant that nearly all the product used was obtained from local growers and suppliers. There was a small garden on the roof of the White House where produce was grown. The ethic of purchasing and the cooking at the White House under my direction and under the continuing direction of the current Obama White House executive chef, Chris Comerford, is one of the respect for the pedigree of the product and the manner it's grown, gathered, raised, or caught. Clinton and Bush families dined regularly on organic foods. Both Wagyu and grass-fed beef were frequently used. Scheib was again quoted in a 2009 article by Think Progress stating that Laura Bush was adamant that in all cases, if an organic product was available, it was used to be used in place of a non-organic product. Meanwhile, the article lists a number of atrocious food policies instituted by her husband. Who knows, perhaps she was so adamant about organics because she knew the quality and safety of conventional food was rapidly going down the toilet. Guess who said everything that's in a bottle or package is like a poison in a way that most people don't even know? The Obama White House may be even more progressive about healthful dining than the previous presidents. In 2008 article about First Lady Michelle Obama published in The New Yorker, one morning during a roundtable at Ma Fisher's, a diner in Milwaukee, Elizabeth Crawford, a recently divorced caterer with two children, brought up the subject of the eating habits of American families. I really, really hope that Barack will jump on that, she said. Then, having given thoughtful but boilerplate responses most of the morning, Michelle Obama suddenly departed from her script. It was the most animated I saw her on the campaign trail. You know, she said, in my household over the last year, we have just shifted to organic for this very reason. I mean, I saw just a moment in my 9-year-old's life. We have a good pediatrician who is very focused on childhood obesity, and there was a period when he was like, she's tipping the scale. So we started looking through our cabinets. You know, you've got fast food on Saturday, a couple of days during the week you don't get home. The leftover's good, not the third day. So the whole notion of cooking on Sunday is out, and the notion of trying to think about a lunch every day. So you grab the Lunchables, right, and the fruit juice box thing, and we think that's juice. And you start reading the labels, and you realize there's high fructose corn syrup and everything we're eating, even jelly, every juice. Everything that's in a bottle, a package, is like a poison in a way that most people don't even know. Yes, high fructose corn syrup is one of the most atrocious ingredients in the American food supply today in terms of what it does to your health. Not only is fructose a major contributor to the metabolic syndrome, diabetes, and obesity, the vast majority of it is also derived from genetically engineered corn, which has its own increasingly well-documented ill health effects. Most recently, the world's first lifetime feeding study using Monsanto GE corn found it to cause massive breast tumors, kidney and liver damage, and other serious health problems. Michelle Obama is certainly not the only one who has referred to high fructose corn syrup as poison. According to Robert Lustig, who is a doctor, excessive fructose does act like a toxin in your body. And Dr. Don Huber has spoken out about the twofold toxic effects of GE crops due to the genetic alteration of the plants itself and the glyphosate sprayed on GE Roundup-ready crops. Ugh. President Obama is aware of the issue but doing nothing about it. Why don't you read that last paragraph?
Okay.
I have to get something to drink. Excuse me.
Sadly, while the Obamas are undoubtedly well aware of health dangers of processed foods in general and genetically engineered foods specifically, their personal belief system has not filtered into the food policies that affect the rest of the population. On the contrary, the president has spent the last 4 years appointing one Monsanto shill after another into key federal positions that wield near absolute power over agricultural issues. Mrs. Obama's efforts to promote organic foods which include a much-publicized White House organic garden, were also quickly tempered and toned down by a personal visit from the Mid-America Crop Life Association, an agribusiness media group, who urged the First Lady to give conventional agriculture equal time, according to a 2009 political article. Topping it all off, the president has also completely ignored his pre-election promise to immediately label GE foods should he win, because Americans should know what they're buying.
That
well,
didn't happen yet.
No. Well, it becomes, it's become abundantly clear that the big biotech and their political lackeys will not even allow us to make an informed decision on this issue by reading our own food labels. And you'd have to be supremely naive not to question the absurd dichotomy between public policies on GE and organic foods and the private decisions made by those in charge and they're in the know. The Monsanto runs and regulates U.S. agriculture. In the first 3 years of Obama administration, 10 different genetically engineered crops and even a genetically modified animal have been approved by the U.S. Department of Agriculture, according to Food and Water Watch, all without a single shred of proof that these foods are actually safe for long-term consumption, or in the case of today's children, lifetime consumption. Could this have anything to do with the fact that highly influential people within the USDA were previous employees of or have other personal ties to Monsanto? The Secretary of Agriculture is Tom Vilsack, a strong Monsanto supporter selected by President-elect Obama in 2008. As governor of Iowa, Vilsack frequently traveled in Monsanto's private jet and was named governor of the year by the Biotechnology Industry Organization. The director of the National Institute of Food and Agriculture is Robert Beachy, a former director of the Monsanto Danforth Center. The general counsel for the USDA is Ramona Romero, who came straight from DuPont, another major biotech company with GE crops patents, where she held a number of key positions, including corporate counsel for complex commercial and antitrust litigation, and corporate counsel and managers of operations and partners. Even the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, has old ties to Monsanto via the Rose Law Firm. Are you getting the picture? The U.S. Food and Drug Administration and other federal agencies are similarly stacked with former Monsanto employees. Likewise, when it comes to selecting which presidential candidate might be better for organic foods in our agricultural system, both Romney and Obama's actions speak louder than words. They do one thing privately and sell another agenda to the public. Neither of them is a champion for real food in the U.S., and both of them cater and yield to the wills of multinational food and biotech companies. Yeah.
The only people that champion for organic is themselves.
That's it.
And that's what keeps organic food so expensive.
Right, because the elite buy it.
It's just for them, not for people who...
And they're restricting its production.
Mm-hmm.
Right. In 2009, Monsanto BP, now U.S. Food Czar, what's wrong with the picture? In 2009, President Obama appointed former Monsanto VP for Public Policy, Michael Taylor, as a senior advisor to the FDA, turning a deaf ear to the loud protests from consumer groups. Taylor is currently serving as a deputy commissioner for foods at the FDA, a position that includes ensuring food labels contain clear and accurate information. He also sees strategy for food safety and planning new food safety legislation. Oh, my God. To say he is a fox guarding a hen house would be an understatement. This sentiment is shared by most people who are even remotely aware of food safety issues. At the time of Taylor's appointment, GE expert Jeffrey Smith commented, "The person who may be responsible for more related food-related illnesses and death than anyone in history has just been made the food safety czar. This is no joke." Now the opposition is gaining steam yet again with an online petition calling for Taylor's removal. Well, President Obama, I oppose your appointment of Michael Taylor. Taylor is the same person who was food safety czar at the FDA when genetically modified organisms were allowed in the U.S. food supply without undergoing a single test to determine their safety or risks. This is a travesty, the petition reads. And passing Prop 37, a key to expanding sustainable agriculture in North America. Organic food specifically prohibited genetically engineered ingredients along with synthetic agricultural chemicals, eating organic essential. The only way to ensure you're not accidentally consuming GE foods, since the U.S. still does not require such ingredients to be labeled. So what's with the double standard? Is genetically engineered food the cake fit only for the paupers of the 21st century? Heck,
yep.
Even the staff cafeteria at Monsanto's U.K. headquarters reportedly banned GE foods from the menu back in 1999. Monsanto
that?
Won't even eat its own stuff. So really, why are the elite making organic food a priority in their own families? And why won't they support labeling so the rest of us can make an informed decision about the foods we eat? And why are they imposing regulations that limit the availability of organically and or locally grown food for so many communities? It's quite evident that we have no real champions for food labeling of genetically engineered foods within this federal government. But right now, we do have a great opportunity to change the situation by circumventing Monsanto's posse entirely. I'm going to go into that, but I just wanted to add, this is culling of the population. That's what it is. It's part of the Illuminati plan.
The bloodless war.
It's part of the Illuminati plan. It's part of the Agenda 21. Okay, and it's sustainable development and reducing the population. The Global 2000 report. You know, they want to reduce the American population by a third by the year 2020, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And by two-thirds by the year 2050, all right? And they want to go from 300 million down to 100 million in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And then worldwide, they want to reduce the population by at least two-thirds by 50-50, by
2050. We're taking up too much room
in the world. No, it's just, you know, we're it's not so much that we're taking up too much room.
Yeah.
What it is we are taking up too many resources. We're uncontrollable.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Land is one of the resources.
But the elite cannot control us.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
There are too many of us.
And Brzezinski said in a publicized Bilderberg meeting that it was easier today to kill a million people than to control a million people.
Mm-hmm.
And this was his recommendation for the for what's happening now. So we must, the plan is to eradicate the population, right, and get it down to a controllable level, right. Otherwise, the elite will lose their positions, will lose everything, you know, which is a damn good thing, right. So it's quite evident that we have no real champions for food safety and labeling of genetically engineered food within the federal government. But we do have a great opportunity to change the situation by circumventing Monsanto's posse entirely. 24 U.S. states have, as part of their state governments, something called the initiative process, where residents can bring to ballot any law they want enacted, as long as it has sufficient support. California has organized such a ballot initiative known as Proposition 37 to get labeling for genetically engineered foods sold in their state. Although many organic consumers and natural health activists already understand the importance of Proposition 37, it cannot be overemphasized that winning the battle over Prop 37 is perhaps the most important food fight Americans, not just Californians, have faced so far. But in order to win this fight for the right to know what is in our food, we need your help. As the biotech industry will surely outspend us by 100-1, if not more, for their propaganda. Please remember the failure or success of this ballot initiative is wholly dependent on your supporting and funding. There are no major industry pockets funding this endeavor. In order to have a chance against the deep pockets of biotech and transnational food corporations, it needs donations from American average citizens. So please, if you have the ability, I strongly encourage you to make a donation to this cause. You can also contact every person who knows that you know that lives in California and encourage them to view some of these videos and get educated on the issues so they can avoid succumbing to the propaganda, as Monsanto and company are paying tens of millions of dollars to deceive the voters in California. We need everyone we can to win next month, every vote we can. To win next month. The election is only 4 weeks away. It's important to realize that getting this law passed in California would have the same overall effect as a national law, as large companies are not likely going to label their products as genetically engineered when sold in California, the eighth largest economy in the world, but not when sold in other states. Doing so would be a costly PR disaster, so please, I urge you to get involved and help in any way you can, regardless of what state you live in. Whether you live in California or not, please donate money to this historic effort through Organic Consumer Fund. Go to that, the Organic Consumers Fund. Organic Consumers Fund. If you live in California and want to get involved, contact C-A-R Right. Car Right to Know. C-A-R Right to Know. .org. C-A Right to Know. .org. They will go through all volunteer requests to put you on a position that is suitable for you based on your state's interest and locations. No matter where you live, please help spread the word in your personal network on Facebook, Twitter. For help, the messaging, just please see carrighttoknow.org. That's capital C, A, capital R, to know. Two is capital. Jesus, why do they make it so hard?
I don't know.
Nobody's going to go to that. They're not going to find it. Capital C-A-R. I-G-H-T, capital T-O, capital N, capital K-N-O-W dot org, car right to know. And then,
just send them to the site and they can get it off the site.
And talk to organic producers and stores and ask them to actively support the California ban. It may be the only chance you have to label genetically engineered foods.
Why don't you just go to the website?
Yeah, the website is Mercola.com.
And you can see lots of interesting things here. There was a little audio piece. Go down to the bottom.
That was, I don't know what that one is.
The video.
On sound, there's not much to see.
Let's listen to this.
No. Sometimes they're all visual.
Into our food system in the mid-1990s.
The U.S. military sprayed an herbicide known as Agent Orange over the jungles of Vietnam.
After its manufacturers declared it tested and safe,
it was later determined that numerous people, including American veterans, were killed or maimed.
And countless children were born with birth defects.
The same chemical company who manufactured Agent Orange
is currently leading the production of GMOs
and spends millions of dollars to campaign against labeling.
It may be years before we know the long-term effects of genetically modified foods. Until then, we are simply asking for companies to label their packages and give us the choice to opt in or opt out of this science experiment. Already, over 50 countries have successfully implemented GMO labeling. The U.S. remains one of the only industrialized nations yet to get with it. While we may not have the financial backing of the corporations, what we do have is the power of the people. 93% of Democrats, 89% of Republicans, and 90% of everyone else is standing together for our right to know what's in our food.
If you feel you have the right to know what's in your food,
here's what to do.
Share this video.
Share these facts.
Vote yes on California Proposition 37.
Let's get with it.
Okay. Sign up at Labeled GMOs.
Well, that's a California proposition. It'd be nice if it were one for every state.
Wouldn't it be nice? Yeah.
I'm glad the people of California care enough to get that put on their ballot.
Yeah, me too. So anyway, I'm going to share that just for a minute while we still have a chance.
shared on Facebook?
Yeah.
I mean, it's really not a very long video, but it gets right to the point.
Yep.
It's really good.
Okay.
We just have a couple more minutes, folks, so...
Yeah, so let's see if I can find something quick.
Get something short. We have a number of things here. Let's find a short one.
Yeah, this was, it was too long. I don't think it is. The truth really is much stranger than fiction. Get biofarms to integrate vaccines, pharmaceuticals into GMO biopharmaceutical crops.
Who is that from? This is by Anthony
Natural Society.
Natural Society. And the author is Anthony... Sarati. The truth really is much stranger than fiction, especially when it comes to the open and admitted future plans of major biotechnology companies. One such case involves a biotech company known as Prodigene, the officials from which actually faced jail time back in 2002 for contaminating the traditional food supply with biopharmaceutical crops that were growing pharmaceuticals and vaccine components associated with AIDS, diabetes, and diarrhea. Contaminating 500,000 bushels of soy with their biopharmaceutical corn that contained pharmaceutical and vaccine components associated with deadly diseases, the company was slapped with a minor $500,000 fine by the USDA, the same government organization that gives Monsanto's crops special speed approval and ignores the company's blatant disregard for its regulations. As it turns out, the pharmaceutical crops were actually mixed in with traditional crops, and unknowingly farmers had already been planted for human consumption. The USDA claims, however, that the crops were confiscated. After receiving the fines and some press coverage on the subject, Prodigene decided not to apologize but to expand their mission. The company, in combination with estimates by Dow AgroSciences, stated that they sought to reach $200 billion in biopharmaceutical crops within 10 years. That was as of 2004. Furthermore, they estimate that 10% of the corn in the U.S. will be biopharmaceutical in nature. In other words, it could contain hidden nanoscale vaccinations, antibiotics, antidepressants, or any form of pharmaceutical drug. One California-based company has even created a spermicidal corn to be used as a mass contraceptive.
In an alternate piece covering the issue entitled Spermicidal Corn, or Spermicidal Breakfast Cereal, what would happen if contraceptive corn or antibiotic wheat accidentally made it to the supermarket? Nobody knows, but it isn't shopping agribusiness from pursuing these crops. Vaccines, drugs, sterilization to be fused into nations' dinners. Are we done?
Yeah, where it's 9:00 now.
Well, anyway, we can go over a minute. I just want to let people know, please join us tomorrow when we do union issues and we may be some more of this. This is almost done. We'll just read it. Vaccination, drug sterilizations to be fused into nation's dinner. The existence of such technology brings the fight against GMOs to an entirely new level. Outside of the known effects, such as recent links to tumors, DNA damage, and other complications, GMO crops on your dinner table could soon contain pharmaceutical drugs like statins in an effort of mass medicating the public. Such an effort would likely be used in conjunction with others to fight against those who choose to opt out of vaccinations, delivering the vaccine to the food supply.
It may sound absurd, and it is, but it is not a new notion. Research has previously designed a method in which mosquitoes could be flying vaccine carriers to inject large numbers of individuals with vaccinations without their knowledge or consent. As one spokesman for a major ecology organization explained, one single mistake from a biotechnical biotechnological company and will be having someone else's prescription medication for breakfast in our cereal. The information ties in with the recent news revealing that Monsanto now owns a monumental gene silencing technology for some pharmaceutical use in humans. The King Biotechnology Company even forged a recent alliance with Alnylam Pharmaceuticals Incorporated to get the initiative started. After all, Monsanto would not lose an opportunity to conquer a large portion of the massive $200 billion biopharmaceutical crop market. Other corporations are looking to get a chunk in too, with the MolecularFarming.com website acting a hub as farmers willing to lease the land for biopharmaceutical experiments across the globe. Touting a net worth of $80 billion in the coming years, investors are continually looking to get their hands on biopharmaceutical growing operations to churn out drug-containing GMO crops for mass consumption and mass profits. So far, they've garnered contracts as far as Zimbabwe to continue their operations. Just like regular GMOs, DDT, and cigarettes, experts are concerned that the real effects of biopharmaceutical growth may not be recognized until decades later. If the public grows more aware of GMO dangers, with the grassroots support and potential passing of Prop 37, that's the proposition in California, however, biopharmaceutical farms may never see mainstream success. Jeez, I hope not. It's really scary.
It's a horrible thing, folks. And, you know, GMO crops are a nightmare, and we do everything we can to try to avoid them. But I know, with limited budgets and so on, it's hard
to... It's very difficult for people.
But,
it would be a horrible economy, and people are trying to save
and
money.
And even those who are, it's hard. It's almost impossible to know what is.
Well, since nothing's labeled, you don't know
anything.
Nothing's
labeled, so you know, you do the best you can. And
you buy a pig in a poke. You try to buy organic when you can and hope for the best. The best thing to do would be to grow your own food, but not everybody is in that position.
And it's limited as to what you can grow. I mean, how much land does people have, you know?
Well, you've got to have a greenhouse and that kind of thing.
You need all the stuff, and it's like it's not a practical thing anymore, but it's almost a mandatory thing.
Yeah.
Lila and I had some nice success this summer with our garden, and we were able to plant tomatoes and and different other things. But you know, it's
the
limited.
Garden's all gone now. The
garden's
over,
gone, and
so.
You know, and unless you have an acre or 2 acres, it's almost impossible to have enough food to can or to preserve some.
Well, we're right to the end of the show, so we hope you stay tuned to listen to us tomorrow night, Wednesday night, where we'll be discussing union issues.
Yes.
In the meantime, do the best you can to purchase the right food for your family and yourself.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, folks.
Thanks.